get mad at me. Joe, why don't you sit down?
Huh? I think we're all fixed.
Can you hear me, Mike? Can you hear me? Okay? Okay. Ladies and gentlemen, to begin the annual memorial service in memory of Felix Pedro, I am happy to present to you Mr. Harold Beard, Chaplain of Igloo No. 4, Pioneers of Alaska.
It is an invariable custom at all meetings of the Pioneers of Alaska to open with an appeal for divine guidance. And it is with pleasure that I call upon Right Reverend William J. Gordon, Jr., Bishop of Alaska Episcopal Diocese, to give the invocation at this time.
Let us pray. Our Father, we thank Thee for the heritage and the example of those who have laid the seeds and foundations in this great land. It is our joy and our privilege to build upon these foundations. We ask that Thou would help us to use the witness and example and strength of these pioneers who have gone before us, along with the new knowledge that Thou dost give us in this day, that we may build a true community in this area in Thy name. We ask through Jesus Christ our Lord. Amen. Amen.
Thank you, Bishop Gordon. Through a custom established throughout the years, the pioneers of Alaska and their friends gather annually at this historic site to honor the memory of Felix Pedro on the anniversary of his discovery of gold in Fairbanks, in the Fairbanks area, on July 22, 1902. By so doing, the vast army of pioneers, both men and women, who came, stayed, and by their honest toil, cast a solid foundation for today's society, both in interior Alaska and throughout all of Alaska, are also honored. As we take time during this hour to pay homage to Felix Pedro and the pioneers who have preceded us, golden memories will again be with us in sparkling brilliance. To welcome you, I have the pleasure of introducing the president of Igloo No. 4, Pioneers of Alaska, Brother Lloyd Pike.
King Regent Bill and Queen Regent Grace, brothers and sisters, pioneers, friends and guests, it is my pleasure to welcome you to the rededication of Pedro Monument. We gather here today to honor a man who made history in days gone by. The memory of Felix Pedro and his gold and discovery of gold will live on for many years to come. Reflections of his perseverance and courage, along with these qualities of other pioneers, serves to guide us and those pioneers who will follow. On behalf of Igloo No. 4, Pioneers of Alaska, I am happy to welcome you, each and every one, to this ceremony. I thank you.
Thank you, President Pike. This time we're going to have an introduction of a number of guests, and
there will be appropriate flowers given to appropriate people. Now, to help us to do this, we have two young ladies, flower girls, and I would ask that Cheryl Sharp and Kathy Matherly come forth now. Perhaps you could stand right here. Now. And now with the two young ladies, we would ask that President Pike and past President Bill Cashin would come forth. You can work out your plan, see, for the appropriate presentations. Right. We are especially happy to have with us the guests of the Fairbanks Pioneers Home. Rain or shine, they are here in the same spirit they displayed in pushing progress and development in years gone by. Typical of the pioneers, who was not able to be with us today, but who has made nearly every ceremony, is Tony Trossett. Tony did not come out today. A major highlight in this program is the introduction of members of the Pioneer Women of Alaska, an organization which was founded on February 19, 1916. In order to be eligible for membership, one had to have been in Alaska or the Yukon watershed prior to January 1, 1908. Each of these women has spent a full lifetime in Alaska, and each has made contributions in her respective way to her family, city, and state. We owe all of them our full gratitude and appreciation. President of Pioneer Women of Alaska is Claire West, who is an Alaskan of 63 years. Born in Seattle, Washington, she left there in September 1907 for Alaska. She married Jeff Rust in October 1910, and they raised six children, four girls and two boys. She's a charter member of Auxiliary No. 8, worked as a telephone operator, writes a news column on the events of the Fairbanks Pioneers Home for the Daily News Miner, as well as finding time to work at the Pioneer Museum in Alaskaland. Others, members of the Pioneer Women of Alaska who are here today, Adriana Coyle. Adriana arrived in Dawson in 1900 and then in Fairbanks in 1907. These are chrysanthemums.
This is a chrysanthemum.
Right. Okay. Yeah. We're going to move pretty fast, y'all.
Are these the women coming?
Yes, yeah, right. Yeah, you can go right up now. Manti Hansen. Okay, go up right next to her, the lady in brown. We'll have to move a little faster. Manti came to Chena in 1907, Fairbanks 1909. And Dorothy Loftus, Fairbanks, 1907. Mildred Nolan, Tonka, 1903, Fairbanks, 1930. An honorary member of the Pioneer Women of Alaska, Eva McGowan. Three other members of this organization are in Fairbanks, the Pioneer's home. They did not come out today. They are Minnie Bruce, Louise Carstens, and Agnes Thomas.
Also, we are very pleased to have with us today the King Regent and Queen Regent from Anchorage. We have Queen Regent Lulu Bowden, Auxiliary Number 4, Anchorage. And King Regent Francis Bowden. Francis is also the president, the grand president of the Igloos of Alaska. Other grand igloo officers are the grand recorder, Mrs. Linda Schaefer, who joined the auxiliary on January 6, 1951. She's a life member of and past president and has held offices of the grand recorder since 1955. The grand trustee is Don Herring, and Don isn't here at the present time. Is he? Where is he? So Don, over here. Yeah, pin a rose on Don. You sit down already, I didn't see ya. The next grand officer will be a challenge to the Flower Girls and to Lloyd Pike, and this is Grand Inner Guard Bill Cashin, who was born in Douglas, came to Fairbanks in 1933, joined the Igloo in 1956, and became a life member in 1965, and is a past president of Igloo Number 4. Can you manage to pin one on him? Past Grand President Adolf Stock. Where's that? There we go. Adolf joined Igloo Number 4 in 1952. He's a life member and a past president of the Igloo. Served as Grand President in 1969. We have two members with us today who are members of the State Pioneer Home Committee. These are Leslie Nerland and Alden Wilbur. They'll stand and...
Lost track of my girl.
They're going the wrong way, Bill. You may get one yet, then.
Right. Bill may get two.
Right. Okay. Two charter members of Igloo Number 4 are still living. It's Robert Bloom, 93, who resides in Seattle, and this year has not come to Fairbanks yet this summer. And John Waldrum, 95, who is at the Pioneer home. In past years, the Igloo has invited men and women who have lived many years in Alaska to be honored guests. Thus, 3 years ago, special recognition was given to members of the Alaska Legislature from the Fairbanks area. 2 years ago, Interior Alaska Early Day Pioneer Pilots were honored for their great contribution to the state of Alaska. And last year, the Igloo selected for specific recognition those men who had served as president of Igloo Number 4 and thereby greatly perpetuated the aims and objectives of Interior Alaska Pioneers. This year, recognition is given to early day teamsters, the men who pioneered in road transportation in Alaska and supplied communities, miners, and others with equipment and supplies. In this memorial service, it is fitting and proper that these men be remembered. In researching this group, approximately 75 names were obtained of teamsters who had operated in Interior Alaska for a period of time ranging from 1903 to 1930. Because of the impracticability of reading this long list, those present today will represent the many who have passed on. And certainly I am sure there are others
that perhaps we have overlooked in putting out the final list. Now, the Teamsters who are here today, we have Gus Yutilla. Okay. Gus was born in Finland and came to Sayre with two brothers in 1913, and then they skied to the Iditarod country where they cut wood for the mines. He has mined for himself in more recent years, has had his own operations working at Ophir and Ruby. Gus married Ina in Butte, Montana, and together they have pioneered in Alaska. Most of Gus's freighting was done in the Iditarod. Frank Wellman is another who has Frank was born in Ohio September 1908 and came to Cordova, Alaska in 1928 and to Fairbanks in 1935. During his many years in the state, he was a Teamster in the Long Lake, Chittenden, Kennecott area. In more recent years, he has worked in mining and is now employed by the post office. He and his wife Millard have three children, Nancy, Jeannie, and David. Frank joined Igloo No. 4, Pioneers of Alaska, in December 1960. Anybody else there?
Just bouquets.
Who's sitting? Oh, okay. To each of these who have passed away and to those who are with us, we salute the contributions you have made in the development of Alaska. Auxiliary No. 8, Pioneers of Alaska, was organized in 1947, and the first officers were installed on January 5, 1958. Representing this active group is their president, Mrs. Ruth Turnbull. Okay. Ruth was born in Linden, Washington. She came to Alaska in June of 1934 and was in Juneau for 17 years before coming to Fairbanks. Ruth is married to Robert Turnbull, and she works at the Northern Commercial Company. Queen Regent, 1971, is Queen Grace Harkness. Grace was born in Michigan a short lifetime ago, 1881. She left Michigan when she grew up and was educated in Idaho and was there married to Walter C. Harkness in 1909. They came to Alaska. They came to Alaska in June 1931 and settled in Fairbanks, and she has resided here since. Grace with her husband Walter raised four children, Keith, Beatrice, Mildred, and Shirley, all who reside in Alaska. King Regent, sure, is William Schaefer. Bill was born in 1901 in Edina, Missouri. He came to Alaska in the early 20s, but didn't stay. He returned in the early 30s and worked as a carpenter in Juneau for a number of years. He arrived in Fairbanks in 1943. He's worked on the canal pipeline and later at Ladd Field as carpenter. In April of 1971, retired from the power plant at Fort Wainwright. He is past president of Igloo No. 4, Pioneers of Alaska. Married his wife Linda in December 1947 and has two stepsons, Terry and Don Kirshner, and four grandchildren. Right, for the president. Okay. At this time, we'll make additional introductions, and first, I would like to introduce the mayor of Fairbanks, Mayor Julian Rice, and his wife and daughter. Right. Stand up.
Visiting from Anchorage
is
a grand trustee.
Oh, okay. Oh, yes, we have another a visitor from Anchorage, Bob Hansen, who is a grand trustee, we find. Nothing like having a good program.
Before we go on, are there any other grand officers here? You can't introduce your wife. Okay. Now, if I were to go any further without another introduction, probably rocks would fly and so forth and so on. So at this time, I would like to introduce Ted and Audrey Loftus, who managed to come in every year. And Ted, where are you?
Just left.
Just left. I saw Audrey, but didn't see you. And where is Art? Well, the two of them are together. Heaven help us. Now, are there any other visitors who have come from a distance that are with us today that perhaps I'm not aware of? Billy? Bill Trick. How are you, Bill? Can't see that far.
There's Eleanor Morgan E. Bitter over here.
The commissioner?
Yeah.
Where? Right here. Okay. And the husband, George. Good. Real fine. Okay. Anyone else care to make an introduction? Ted, you have somebody you want to introduce. Harvey Marlin. Okay, Harvey is come in. Okay, well, we'll... Annabeth, stand up. Ebby wants to introduce you. This is your last chance. Okay. Real fine. Stand up, Paul. Somebody thinks that you're a visitor. Anybody else? Okay. Our speaker today is Leslie Nerland, a pioneer in every sense of the word. He was born in Dawson, Yukon Territory, to Andrew and Annie Nerland, U.S. citizens in business there. He first came to Skagway, Alaska in 1902. He moved to Seattle with his parents, where he received his education, graduating from the University of Washington in 1924. He married his wife Mildred in 1926, and they moved to Fairbanks in 1930, where they have made their home ever since, raising three children, Jerry, Ron, and Melissa. He has been active in business, civic, and educational affairs of Fairbanks and Alaska, and has always given graciously to help his fellow men. His activities have included those of Mayor of Fairbanks, member of Board of Regents, University of Alaska, and a member of the Constitutional Convention Committee. He became a life member of Igloo No. 4, Pioneers of Alaska, in November 1959. It gives me a great deal of pleasure to introduce our speaker today, A. Leslie Nerland, whose subject is monuments. Leslie?
King and Queen Regent, Mayor, the Honorable Mayor, and Mrs. Rice and daughter, ladies of the auxiliary, pioneer women, pioneer men, and friends. Many of Pedro Dome's Golden Day ceremonies have been marred by rain. This is to be expected at this time of the year because this is when we get our rains, as witnessed the year of 1967. In writing my talk for today, I have prepared for that eventuality and have several places at which I can terminate if we have a rainstorm. However, the present outlook doesn't seem too hazardous, and it looks pretty much like you'll have the benefit of my complete address. But I respectfully request that any who might be inclined to pray for rain please do so silently. And I want to further warn you that I think I have Bishop Gordon on my side. What more can be said that's not already been said about Felix Pedro? We've gathered here annually for many years to honor his memory and to commemorate the discovery of gold in the Fairbanks area. He has become the symbol to us of justification for men to have come to the Tanana Valley and for the reason that all of us are here today. Times have changed since Felix Pedro discovered gold in this immediate area, but many of the conditions that existed then are still in effect. We still have claim jumpers, as witness the holes that have been dug within our eyesight by come lately prospectors who foolishly think there might be gold that was overlooked almost 70 years ago when Felix Pedro first prospected this very ground. In fact, some of our pioneer igloo members, who are more versed in mines and mining than many of us, have urged that all who are conveniently able to do so police the area and chase off the intruders who frequently invade this hallowed ground. Early day characters who were always ready to shoot to kill to obtain gold already recovered or to take possession of a claim already staked have now been replaced by auto-driving desperados who take pot shots as they speed by at the bronze monument that we have erected here in honor of Felix Pedro. Only through the good efforts of some of our Igloo Number 4 members has the plaque been restored to its present respectable appearance for this annual ceremony. It is very doubtful if commemorative plaques will be erected in the future to honor individuals who contribute to the economic development of Alaska. As a matter of fact, the new trend was probably established back in the 1920s when the USSR&M Company, better known to us as the FE Company, dug their ditch, built their powerhouse, and began dredging operations in our creeks that for years had protected the gold-laden gravel at depths that were too deep and too wet for the early day miners to reach. To the best of my knowledge, no monuments have been erected to honor the USSR&M Company for bringing us 25 or 30 years of prosperity. Had it not been for them, the 20s in the 20s and the 30s might have been so discouraged, have discouraged those few who remained after World War I, that even Fairbanks itself might have become a ghost town like Cleary, Fox, Chattanooga, and Olness. It is true that the U.S. Smelting left some monuments after their dredging operations, but it is also quite likely that had present-day theories of the ecologists and environmentalists prevailed then, they might have been delayed or even discouraged in starting their Fairbanks operations. However, had present thinking toward the environment existed then, the ground might have been restored more to its original state after the dredges passed through. On the other hand, Mother Nature is gradually removing the scars that have been left, and to date, little use has been found for the worked-out areas. More likely, however, if those who are greatly concerned with ecology, environment, and the preservation of our wildlife had expounded their ideas in the 1920s, perhaps even the building of the Davidson Ditch would have been opposed and prevented on the grounds that it would impede caribou migration and contribute to their extinction. At the present time, major oil companies are working around the clock to prepare for the Department of the Interior detailed plans for the building of the pipeline that will guarantee the preservation of the environment. It is already assured that when the pipeline is built, it will be so damage-proof that the fears many have will soon be forgotten. At the present time, preparations have been made on the north slope to simulate conditions that caribou will encounter when the pipeline is constructed. They are now awaiting the first caribou run and have cameramen ready to take movies and still pictures of the caribou running under or jumping over the pipeline under all conditions they will encounter when the pipeline is built. It is confidently felt that no interference will be noticed by the animals. Some have said the same results could have been obtained by filming herds of caribou jumping across the Davidson Ditch. as they have been doing for the past 40-odd years, and are still thriving rather than becoming extinct. Perhaps it is significant that the first great gold rush at the end of the last century was first directed to the Klondike, which is in a province of Great Britain. That country has later sent men and capital to develop mining in this and other areas of Alaska. And now another entity of that country, British Petroleum, is a prime mover in the discovery of and development of oil on the North Slope. I look for no monument such as we have placed here for Felix Pedro to be erected for British Petroleum, even if their stock should double or triple or quadruple. And please understand, I'm not here today, nor am I qualified to give you tips on the stock market. But we are not here today to talk of oil wells and pipelines and refineries and maybe even hydroelectric dams that might be in our future. Golden days are days of nostalgia, which Webster defines as the longing for something far away or long ago. It is fashionable nowadays to dwell on things of long ago. Old-time movies are again popular, as are pictures, songs, and dances. And TV programs of the Wild and Woolly West appear never to go out of style. Golden days in Fairbanks have largely replaced our former popular ice carnival because the general theme is more interesting. The month of July is more comfortable than the month of March, and it gives us the opportunity to reminisce of the days gone by. We use Felix Pedro as a symbol of golden days, but our conversations invariably drift back to the names of the well-known and successful miners who struck it rich in the early days of the Klondike, Fairbanks, Nome, and Iditarod, as well as Ruby, and many other mining camps that attracted men after news of a discovery. Little matter whether they saved or squandered their riches, that was their own business. Their fame was in finding the gold, not in their use of it. But I would like to talk a little today about three men who didn't become rich from the gold they found, but in their own way contributed greatly to the development of Alaska. They are symbolic of many who came to Alaska for various reasons, some even to find gold, but in failing in that, helped to make our state great and a wonderful place in which to live. These three represent businessmen, laborers, and miners. I recently restored, with the aid of a magnifying glass, the blurred pages of a diary my father, Andrew Nerland, began when he left for the Klondike in 1898. He had been born in a valley in Norway adjacent to a beautiful fjord. Migrated to America as a young man of 18 in 1888, and after a brief stay in Minneapolis, moved to Seattle where he obtained work in the painting and paper hanging trade. This eventually led him to Guatemala, where a World's Fair was being held. While there, he participated in the decorating of the Royal Palace and returned to Seattle shortly after the discovery of gold in the Klondike. He had been greatly impressed as a small boy of eight in Norway when a visitor returned from America and displayed a $5 gold piece, which looked very, very good to him. Perhaps that is what spurred him on to make that long, hard trip up to a great land of gold. At any rate, his diary began with the simple entry on Tuesday, March 8, 1898. Quote, left Seattle on the steamship Navarro, Dyea, Alaska. The next day, the ship stopped in Vancouver, Victoria, B.C., and there was a great rush to go uptown and obtain miners' licenses. He reports that he was the first at the office door. On Tuesday, March 15th, they landed at Skagway and went on to Dyea, where they began sorting out the food and supplies everyone was required to have with them for their own sustenance. In a few days, they started out for Lake Bennett. Relaying their outfit on sleds, they pulled by hand, carrying from 200 to 1,000 pounds. 5 days later, they arrived at Canyon City, only 10 miles away from Dyea. Many trips were required to move their supplies, and 4 days later, they On March 27th, they moved to Sheep Camp and pitched their tent on 6 feet of snow. The next day, he took an exploratory trip to the top of the summit and found it surprisingly steep. Bad weather then set in. They were unable to do any packing, although many tried. On Sunday, April 3rd, there was a blowing snowstorm, and over 100 people were buried in the famous snowslide. He helped in digging out those who were still living, as well as those who had suffocated or frozen to death. After many days of packing, they arrived at Lake Bennett, where they were going to build their boat. On the next day, April 28, 1898, he reported war declared between U.S. and Spain. Then began the task of cutting timber, whipsawing, and drying lumber. He reported that he and a partner were the top sawyers of the camp. And on May 9th, they laid the foundation of the boat, which was to be 30 feet long, 6 and 8 feet wide, and 40 inches high. On May 24th, they launched the boat. No champagne was opened, but in spite of this, it didn't leak a drop. This was also a Canadian holiday, being the Queen's birthday. Then followed days of hazardous boating through the rapids of various riverways and lakes that are still famous points along the way of that great migration. Such names as White Horse Rapids, Lake Lebarge, 30 Mile River, Big Salmon, Little Salmon, Five Finger Rapids, Pink Rapids, Fort Selkirk, and Stewart River. They finally arrived at Loustown, opposite Dawson, on June 10th, 95 days after leaving Seattle. I wonder how many of us would have come to Alaska today if we were faced with the long, hard journey of 95 days. He made trips to the various creeks out of Dawson, but most all the ground was staked, whether it was good or bad. Jobs were scarce, too, because there was a great oversupply of labor, and each steamer that left Dawson was loaded with many who had become disillusioned in their search for gold, and the few who had struck it rich and were leaving for southern climes to enjoy their wealth. Andrew Nerland left, too, in a little more than a month after he arrived in Dawson, but by this time he had decided the future in the Klondike for him was not in digging for gold, but to go into the paint and wallpaper business with his partners from the Guatemala trip, the Anderson brothers. He left for Seattle on June 7th to buy supplies and for their new venture and made the round trip in 52 days, arriving back in Dawson on September 6th. From then on, he became a businessman, not a miner for gold, and this pursuit later took him to Fairbanks, Iditarod, and Nenana. His participation in local and territorial affairs, as well as the present Nerland business, stand as a monument to him. He would have been very proud to know that some of the fourth generation of his family are now engaged in the business. Frank Smith, with whom I have had an association for the past 37 years, was also foreign-born. On a small farm near Innsbruck, Austria, on October 17, 1886, he left for the United States in 1901, before he was 15 years of age. Because of his youth and his small stature, it was hard for him to obtain work, but he eventually did as a fourth cook on a dining car in Pennsylvania, and this was the glamorous title that in those days they accorded the dishwasher. He worked at this and other similar occupations for many years. When he went to Juneau in 1912, his small stature still eliminated him from a job at the Treadwell mine, and when he returned to Fairbanks in 1934, the U.S. smelting also thought him too lightweight to do the heavy work on their dredges or thawing points. But he did work on the section gang of the Alaska Railroad. Martin Pinsk and I were his main employers in those days, and we found him a tireless worker. I recall the sound of his axe falling constantly as he cut wood for our kitchen stove. To those of you who are not familiar with that, that's a fuel we used to use for cooking in the kitchen. He didn't miss a stroke as he put the wood on the chopping block. On February 11, 1946, he became our permanent employee at Nerland's, where he performed valued services as maintenance and handyman until his retirement in March of this year. Frank is self-educated, well-read, and enjoys things of beauty. He has long been a member of the National Geographic Society and has been an interesting conversationalist. Since his retirement, he has made his home in Fairbanks at the Pioneer Home, where he is a self-sustaining guest. He refers to the home as the Waldorf Astoria. He has worked hard, paid his own way, and will be able to continue to do so for the balance of his life. He is typical of many thousands of Alaskans who have contributed to Alaska much through their labors. Charles Roderick Wachwitz also came to Alaska in 1912 at the age of 24 on the famous steamship Humboldt. He had been born in Norwood, Missouri. Charlie came to Fairbanks to work with his brother, Fred, who was engaged in the prospecting and mining on Pedro Dome Cleary Creek area. Charlie was essentially a hard rock miner, and he worked as one of the most of his life. However, he did work at placer mining for a while, having mined with his brother Fred for 3 years on Cleary Creek and also for a short time on 8 Above Little El Dorado. Headquarters for the Wachwitz brothers was established on Bedrock Creek, a right limit headwater tributary of Cleary Creek, where they successfully mined the gold-bearing quartz vein of the Wyoming Lode claim. This became Charlie's permanent home for over 30 years. Charlie was a skillful miner and a rugged individual. At one time, he had a contract to carry the mail between Cleary and Chattanooga post offices. It was customary for him to hand shovel and tram 16 cars of ore or waste from the Wyoming mine before proceeding on foot to Cleary to backpack the outgoing mail to Chattanooga and return with the incoming mail to Cleary City. Charlie received the grand total of $500 per year from the post office for making these twice weekly trips. The ruggedness of Charlie Wachwitz was masked the intellect that was recognized only by those who were privileged to have been intimately acquainted with him. He was a prolific reader. His interests were varied, but he read only good books. He spoke intelligently about the many things that he had read. It was not unusual for him during relaxed moments to recite lengthy poems from the classics. He also knew rocks and minerals, and many hard rock miners and prospectors would seek his advice during their search for ore. Charlie, with his brother Fred, dug numerous shafts and prospect pits in the Pedro Dome Cleary area in their search for new bonanzas. There are doubtless many, many rocks on the dumps of these shafts and pits that were scarred by Charlie's pick when he dislodged them from in place. These are his hallmarks, the result of his honest toil. The chances are favorable some of these marks will be preserved for a period measurable only in terms of geologic time. Charlie barely eked out a living for the many years of toil he put in the Pedro Dome Cleary area, but prospectors like Charlie and his brother Fred have contributed unmeasurably towards the development of hard rock mining in Alaska. Many have faith that it will one day become a major resource, and it is my understanding that even now large interests are considering big-scale investments in the Cleary area, which may make fruitful the years of development work Charlie and those like him devoted. I have read much of the foregoing history of Charlie Wachwitz from the obituary which was read at his funeral after he had passed away on May 31st of this year. This and other fitting obituaries have been prepared by Bruce Thomas, historian of Pioneer Igloo No. 4, and have served as final tributes to pioneers whose many years of service might otherwise have gone unhonored. It is hoped that Bruce Thomas's successors in office will continue this fine tradition. I have asked you today, in addition to honoring the memory of Felix Pedro, to consider a brief history of three men who are typical of the many thousands who have found no gold or little gold in Alaska. They and their colleagues, in their various ways, have helped transform Alaska from a gold rush country to a wonderful place in which to live, to raise our families, and to look forward confidently to the future of this great state. This is the 19th annual ceremony of honoring Felix Pedro as the discoverer of gold in the Fairbanks area. I believe I have participated in most, if not all, of these ceremonies, but this is the first time I have had such a prominent part. Believe me, it's going to be hard next year to go back to hauling water for the coffee, picking up the donuts at the store in town, and setting up chairs as I've always done in the past. But thank you all for listening to me during my few minutes of glory at the summit.
Thank you, Les, for an excellent insight to the true monuments of Alaska. And I'm sure that you will rise to the occasion next year and take any project or any problem that comes your way. I notice that we have with us today, and we missed these people a little earlier, the president of the Chamber of Commerce. I'd like to introduce Al Parrish. Al, hold up your hand so people know who you are. Right. You have members of your staff present that you'd care to introduce. Fine. Thank you, Al. The wreath, which is now placed on the monument by President Pike, is in fond remembrance of Felix Pedro, a true pioneer. May his great deeds and virtues ever remain green in the memory of Alaska. At this time,